5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hey everybody, this is Kate
and Devin. Hi,
welcome to Med Crimes
episode 2.
That always adds such a nice touch, Devin.
It's my signature tune.
Except,
well, no, it's not, because I copied it from someone. Some show out there.
That some show is called The Twilight Zone.
Yeah, a little... that one.
Jesus. I'm really glad that that we're here doing this again. That's really exciting.
So this time we're a little bit more prepared.
Yes.
Right? We're back in the basement.
We are.
And I've now got my podcast jacket. Last time I was a little chilly. I've got my wool socks.
Yeah.
And thank you to your adorable son, Benny. There was some hand warmers just here waiting for me when I arrived.
She was like, oh, that's so considerate of you. Did you know I was going to be cold? I was like, no, my three-year-old just forgot them on the table. He was playing with them.
Love you, kid. It was perfect. Ya. He's got my back.
We are a little bit more prepared this time, so this is going to be good. Also, we do apologize for some of the audio issues in the previous episode. We are learning every time we do this. We've replaced a microphone that was a little problematic and creating that static sound. And we've adjusted some mic positioning. And we are committed to bringing you the audio quality that you want and deserve in a high quality podcast like Med Crimes.
For sure.
Yep.
So I think we should get ready to back into it. Can you give us just like a quick recap?
I really
very,
can.
Very quick. Where All we right. left off with Mr. Cullen.
All right. So Mr. Cullen here has made a name for himself thus far by spiking bags of heparin and IV fluid with insulin and causing a lot of adverse. Yeah, you can see that again. causing a lot of adverse events on the floor, a lot of life-threatening hypoglycemia situations. And he's also murdered some people is right. what he says they and we've only really confirmed like one so far. So he also had sort of sunk his claws into a lady named Michelle and had stalked her aggressively. She ended up pressing charges. This culminated in another suicide attempt. He spent time in a psychiatric facility again. He's back out into the open. Of course, the hospital that he was just hired at, Warren Hospital, says, sure, you can still come to work.
Oh, boy.
And I mean, that's like where we left off.
And here we are.
So before we start, I do want to say one thing.
Oh.
Patreon shout out.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So okay. we have two new Patreons.
Yeah.
We have Amanda, no last name. We love you, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
I think that your last name is like superstar, mermaid, unicorn, something along those lines. That's what I think. Also, we have a Wanda Van Cor, who
Wanda.
Wanda sounds like a secret agent. I love you, Wanda. And I love you, Amanda. You guys have made our day. Thank you so much.
Thank you for supporting us.
You guys are the best.
Thank you. We really appreciate your support. It's really going to help to upgrade our equipment, kind of keep us going,
yes.
and you know, see where we can take it.
That's
thank
right.
you, guys.
If any of you out there wish to contribute to our cause and to help keep this little podcast going, feel free to visit www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast. And make a donation. We've got several different tiers. You get access to ad-free content super early. Eventually, we're going to have a merch store, which you're going to get discounts through.
Yeah. And right now, there's a little cast your vote for your favorite Devonism from the first episode of
yes.
Med Crimes.
My personal favorite is Twinkle the Lights, Feed the Santa.
And if for some reason no one picks apple cider donut, then I think I should just wallow in pity and eat some apple cider donuts.
Or I'm just going to make you a custom apple cider donut t-shirt like for Christmas
there
so that you don't have to wallow.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
All
hey,
right.
Here we go.
So here we are. Charles Cullen. It is now September 1st, 1993. He is back to work at Warren Hospital in New Jersey, working the night shift, which is his love. He's not in a good place mentally, folks. He has like really had a downward spiral, right? He's just lost his wife. He just had this big issue, his first real run-in with the law. He spent another stint in a psychiatric facility, and now he's back to work. So a patient at Warren Hospital in the ICU where he worked by the name of Helen Dean was recovering from a breast cancer surgery.
Oh.
She was doing really, really well and was scheduled to go home the following day. She was doing so darn well. Now, she was spending one last night in the ICU. Her son Larry was at the bedside. This is all by Larry's account, and it's really interesting what he has to say. So he recalls that a male staff member that had not previously been involved in his mom's care, he didn't recognize him at all, walked into the patient's room, asked Larry to leave, and was kind of a dick about it. And so he went and got a cup of coffee or whatever. He came back, and when he returned, his mom said, well, that was really weird. That guy stuck me with something. And Larry was like, what? And she lifted up her Johnny and revealed a pinhole on her inner thigh. And she
a
was
pinhole.
Like, he a pinhole, like an injection hole in her inner thigh.
Oh, boy.
I know. So immediately, Larry is like, well, what the fuck? That was really suspicious. This guy asked me to leave and he gives my mom a shot. She has no even idea who he is or what he's doing. So Larry calls the staff and he tells the charge nurse what happened. And he also tells the doctor who comes by and is like, I don't know what to happen either. She showed the doctor the pinhole and the doctor's looking at the record like she's not due for any injections. I have no explanation for this. And like, chalk it up to a little old lady being confused in the hospital. I don't know. Nothing really happened that night.
Did he sneak into the room? Or like I'm almost picturing like a medical show when you have like these bad guys that are like dressed in scrubs and they're
he didn't even sneak in, Devin. Like, he fucking walked in.
No, I know he was working, but like, God, I don't know. It's just like, did no one be like, okay, so we're calling all the staff.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like, was he working that night?
Let's get Cullen.
I don't actually know if he was physically working that night, but he was in scrubs. I do know that he was in scrubs. He was in white scrubs from head to toe, which is something that the patient recalled. And she told her son, Larry, it was a guy, and Larry saw him too. They both recalled this guy, head to toe, white scrubs. It was a little weird. He was the only guy there totally in white scrubs. I don't know if he was scheduled to be on that night or not. I feel like why else? I feel like he probably was. Anyway, that's my personal feeling. That's not confirmed. I don't know. But so the following day, Helen, all of a sudden in the morning, is violently ill. So she's pale. She's clammy. Her heart rate and blood pressure are dangerously low. And everyone's kind of working to try to figure out what's going on. All of a sudden, her heart stops. She was coded. And unfortunately, she did not make it. They could not bring her back. So... Now, the oncologist who was sort of driving Helen's care came and discussed with the son. And he said, I heard from the ICU doc last night that there was some question of like a pinhole, an injection or something. Now,
were they almost chalking her up as to being, well, no, I guess they couldn't. I was going to say chalking her up to be delirious, but the son.
But the son witnessed him going in there. So like really, we knew. And then there was also the issue of her having a physical pinhole there.
Yeah.
And which the doctor and a bunch of other staff members saw. So I feel like this was really brazen. Like, how did he expect to not fucking get caught from doing this?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
This was the ballsiest thing.
And if it's at that moment, like, who's not there? Like, let's call all the staff to the floor.
Exactly.
And let's get everybody here. Who did what?
Exactly. I think that this was all very, like, self-destructive pattern. Like, he just gives zero fucks anymore. Like, his fucks
like he's
have
trying
all
to
gone
get
out the window.
I'm in such a
he's
bad
like,
place.
He's like, I don't care. I'm in a bad place. I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want and fuck around with people's lives. He's a douchebag of the highest order. So Larry is discussing his mom's passing with her primary oncologist. This was obviously very unexpected because she was supposed to discharge today and everything was going really well. So the oncologist kind of reviewed the situation because he was very suspicious about that event from last night and was like, she would have had literally no other reason for her blood pressure to drop and for like, there's no other reason for this. So he sort of low-key insinuated, Larry, if they ask you, do you want an autopsy? Say yes. You need to say yes. Because this whole situation sounds super sketchy and they can do some toxicology
testing.
The hospital
wouldn't initiate one?
Well, not necessarily, unless the family wants it.
Okay.
So the family really does have to decide if they want an autopsy or not. So Larry knew after talking to the oncologist that she had been murdered. He's like, he just like had this feeling, and he had the feeling that the oncologist felt as well, that something bad had happened. Somebody had purposefully done something to his mom to kill her. So what did Larry do? We love Larry, by the way.
Yeah.
He fucking picked up the phone and called the police.
Good.
Finally, a third party is getting involved, right?
Yes.
So Larry immediately calls the Warren County prosecutor and he reported Cullen. So Cullen, the following day, is notified that there's been a police report regarding this suspicious event that happened with Helen Dean, and he's sent home pending an investigation, so not allowed back to work. And at this point, Cullen is, like, so self-destructive. He's, like, he's got, like, no remorse. He literally, in the book that I've been citing, he's on a mish. And in the book that I was reading about all of this, The Good Nurse, which is an amazing book, I'm going to link that in the show notes for you guys. He apparently, like, sat on his couch after getting that call, left the door unlocked, and just, like, waited for authorities to come busting in. He just 100% expected to get caught. He's like,
just like he's sitting there with a beer, like, come and take me.
He is.
Right?
Speaking of beer, Devin.
Yeah. We have Truly's, people. we have alcohol
this time.
I decided that, you know what, if you're hanging out with your best friend, just talking about stuff.
So this is a Truly peach tea, and it's a little sweet, but I do really like it.
I'm drinking the Truly Holiday Edition Spiked Apple Spice. Woo. These are in no way sponsors, I mean, because we're not cool enough yet to have sponsors, but hey.
No, yeah, this is not a sponsor.
Free advertisement for them.
There you go, Truly. Med Crimes Podcast. I was actually going to bring down a cup of coffee, but this is way better.
I thought so. I told you I was bringing something special.
I thought you just meant you because you're so special.
There's that. Yeah.
Okay, so back to Cullen. He's like, fuck my life. I'm just going to unlock the door and wait for these cops to bust me down. So again, though, there's no proof.
Right.
There's no proof. There's no video evidence. He didn't withdraw anything or sign out a narcotic.
Larry doesn't count as an eyewitness.
Aside from Larry's ID, there is no eyewitness account that he physically injected anything. And Larry was out of the room when that happened.
Yep.
Oh, jerk. An autopsy ensues. I know. I can see Devin's shifting her weight in her chair.
Remember, I was feeling remorse for this guy, and now I'm just kind of
Fuck this guy. Fuck this guy. We fucking hate this guy. So, okay. So there's no proof, no evidence. So an autopsy happens.
Yeah.
And the pathologist takes the injection site on the inner thigh. And he incises the whole area. He takes it out.
Okay.
And he sent that to the pathology lab for a full tox screen.
Nice.
They tested for hundreds of different substances and came up completely empty.
Come on. Nothing.
I shit you not, nothing.
Come on.
They didn't test for this one thing that we'll talk about in a minute. So
insulin?
No.
Oh, no. Nope. That was his weapon the first time.
But
so
again,
just...
her heart rate and blood pressure were dropping. This is a different physiology, right?
True.
Yep.
I know. You just said clammy and all that other stuff. So
I feel like at this point, something really shifts, and he's kind of like, the insulin thing became a little obvious with people.
Time to change
my MO a little bit. So he was placed on an indefinite administrative leave pending this whole investigation. Now, the police were involved, right?
They only know it was him at this point because Larry was able to ID him.
Yes.
So Larry ID'd him.
That's the only way they know it was him. And so he was placed on a leave, and he just decides, you know what? I guess I've like raised suspicion and burned my bridges at this place. I'm just going to quit. So he quits Warren Hospital at this point. So he decided, like, I got to get some kind of job that's a little higher paying because he's got two kids. That he's really not seeing a whole lot at this point. He's kind
Correct.
Of removed
he's
himself.
Just supporting, but you would think.
Exactly.
Granted, we're in what year?
The 90s? 93.
I don't know what nurses made in the 90s, but I would imagine that an RN in the ICU.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. That's no, they job. Did well. So he needed to make some higher pay, though, because he had child support payments that he wasn't even able to make.
Remind me of his first wife's name.
Adrienne. We love Adrienne.
I would hope that Adrienne took him to the cleaners in the divorce.
I don't have the details on that, but I hope that
my
she did.
My hope as a woman.
Also, I just said 1993, but I believe the year is actually 94 because it was in April of 94 that he started his next job, which was at Hunterdon Hospital in their ICU, which was also in New Jersey. So he works there for, I know, he works there for a while. Also, like, these places are just not offering any sort of, like, performance, like, reference. And people are just, like, not checking references because there was such a critical nursing shortage. And nobody really gave a fuck. They were like, you're an RN with a pulse. Come work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's April 94. He starts working at Hunterdon Hospital. He works there for a period of time. Now, we got a hold of a performance review from October of 1995. So this is when he had been there for over a year, like a year and a half. Some quotes are, he was a pleasure to work with. He's smart and attentive, and he's a great patient advocate. So the first year, he actually like laid pretty low and did pretty well, weirdly enough. So
these are not qualities that I would say describe him. Patient advocate? Yeah, for death. Like, come on.
He advocates for critical injury and death to his patients. Yes.
Oh.
So Despite this, he does.
He smoked one over on them for that first year. I gotta just tell you that.
True. He did continue to abuse and attempt to harm patients throughout his entirety of his employment. So I think he tried to like be on his better behavior, but he does admit that he was still injecting people with shit. So his new drug of choice
is
the shit that he was injecting people with was digoxin.
And that's not one of the ones that they tested him for?
No. So digoxin is a cardiac dig, the good old dig. We do refer to it as dig, so you may hear us say dig. So digoxin is a cardiac glycoside. It's derived from the plant digitalis, which is also known as foxglove. It's actually a beautiful flower. I have some in my yard, even though it's poisonous, and I should not have planted that because I have a pet and small kids.
Random.
Just so you know.
Note to self, don't bring your kids to Kate's front yard.
Yeah, don't do that. Also, like, I'm a medical professional. You would think I would, like, no. Anyway. So it's commonly used to treat cardiac ailments, including atrial fibrillation, which is a common cardiac arrhythmia. It causes your heart rhythm to change slightly and your heart to beat a little faster than normal. And what it does is it slows the conduction within the heart, so it slows down the heartbeat. And it also treats heart failure because it improves the contractility and the cardiac output. So it comes in a couple different forms. It comes in oral forms and IV forms. And the IV form, and it still comes like this, Devin, because I have like nightmare memories. So the IV form comes in these like little tiny glass ampoules with like a little glass thing on the top that you have to break. You have to break the glass to get it open. Mm-hmm. And I've cut myself. Like when I worked on the cardiac floor, I have a whole system now. You have to use like gloves and you have to put the whole thing in like a washcloth.
That's
and like
your
snap.
System now, except for now you don't have to, you just get to write it.
I don't have to do it now.
BID.
Yeah, I don't have to deal with that shit anymore. Somebody else can cut themselves, not me. I paid my dues. So it comes in these little glass ampules that are like multi-dose. So typically there's like three doses per ampule. Okay. So you break open an ampule and you have like three doses, right? Mm-hmm. It's not closely monitored because it's not a narcotic.
No, it's not.
So again, these are kept like essentially as floor stock and just like hanging around in the med room. So later on, so with Helen Dean.
This guy's making me think that we need to like count doses of every med that's available to someone.
Yes, I know. Well, and now we do, right? We have a PIC system, which literally accounts for every medication that we give for every single patient. So that's
in most settings.
You're right. Not all, but in the hospital setting, that's what we have. But that's very very true.
Yeah.
For others.
Right.
So Charlie later on said that with Helen Dean, he estimated that he used three full multi-dose ampules with Helen Dean. So he drew up three triple dose ampules in one syringe, which was nine doses. That would have given her a dose of about 1.5 milligrams of digoxin, which I mean would be lethal for anybody.
So this didn't start affecting her right away, because like she didn't start crashing till the next morning.
Yeah, I mean she may have had some earlier effects, but it's also digoxin is one of those things too that can have sort of a cumulative effect in the body. That it actually has a measurable digoxin level that we monitor for effectiveness. Like you can draw a digoxin level on
I'm
someone.
I'm amazed by her doctor-esque-ness right here.
Well, it's nurse practitioner-esque.
Ditto.
But thank you.
True.
Yeah. So
it's just like this aura that's coming around you.
And just throwing off vibes of intelligence and knowledgeableness. See, that's not a word. See? I just undid everything. So it's a medication that's cumulative also. So it may very well have taken a while for all of that to sort of compound in her body and create this lethal effect. So a dose that massive would have caused bradycardia, bradyarrhythmias, hypotension, shock, and death, which is exactly what happened to poor Helen Dean. So this kind of became his new thing. He's like, so this isn't as obvious as insulin because it doesn't create those, you know, obvious hypoglycemia symptoms. So he, you know, it's not something that somebody could check her blood sugar and find out right away that she's hypoglycemic and give her a medication to counteract that. This was a lot more mysterious, and it allowed him to fly under the radar and do this to a lot of people for a lot longer.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So the year is now 1995. Time rolls on. And he reports that he really did this to like a large number of patients. And his behavior in 1995 really did start to change.
So now it's, at first it was all the insulin. Now we're going to the DIDGE.
Yeah. And that's just like his thing now.
Mm-hmm. Now, the DIDGE did show up on the toxicology.
It did not show up on the toxicology. That is something they did not test for.
So
they tested for husbands of husbands.
Right.
They tested for hundreds of different substances. Digoxin was not one of them, weirdly enough. You would think that they would have tested for like all the substances that was that were available on the floor. Like, can we test for all those medications? You know what I mean?
I know.
It's a little weird that they didn't.
I'm sorry that I'm on my phone, but you said husbands, so I'm finding out that.
Bitch, I'll wait. I'm sitting here with my Truly.
We're good. I just thought that
it's fine. There's not people listening or anything.
I thought that my husband paid the babysitter, and
oh fuck,
she's saying that he didn't. David.
Okay, I'll wait.
No, we're good.
All right.
We're good.
I needed a sip of my Truly anyway, so it's all good. So this was his new thing. So 1995, his behavior really starts to change at work. So he sort of falls into that same pattern. He starts, really kind of getting like aggressive and kind of like flippant with mm-hmm. his coworkers and dismissive. He had more of an attitude. He was a lot less social. He was less professional. And some of his coworkers started reporting too that he would like insist on bathing the female patients alone. And he would like draw the blinds in their room. So he was giving people the heebie-jeebies, like big time, and started getting great. Like real weird and pervy around the female patients.
Ugh.
Like gross.
So now he's starting to be a perv.
Yeah, like starting to be a perv.
Great.
So one time he was actually physically caught administering unprescribed drugs and withholding prescribed drugs to a patient. Mm. So it was his nursing supervisor that caught him doing this. And as soon as she like shined a light on his patient charts and started looking back, she's like, holy shit, this guy is ordering his own medications, ordering tests for people, omitting medications.
Doctor.
He's literally playing doctor. And it's like, he's just given, you know, a plethora of different medications, whatever he feels like giving at the time. He's not following prescribed orders. And to say the very least, he's grossly neglecting the patients and abusing them. And she found multiple recording and administration errors. And the supervisors then were like, we got to sit down with this guy and see what's going on. So they met with him. They asked him what was going on. They had sort of a mini. They came to him with all this evidence and were like, look at all these tests.
These were ordered by you. Proof and mm-hmm.
These were ordered by you. I confirmed with the physician these weren't ordered by you. The physician never ordered these medications. Why are these patients getting these medications? Why are you dictating this? That's way outside the realm of a registered nurse. So eventually they landed on, okay, well, we're going to ask you to resign. They didn't even fire him. They said, we're going to ask you to resign.
Why are you giving him the respect to leave on his own?
Exactly. So he took that. He said, okay, I will resign. But get this, he was given the chance to stay on per diem.
In case you occasionally want to kill someone instead of full time.
As needed.
As needed.
As PRN.
PRN. QID.
So thankfully, though, after this point, his attendance is really sporadic. And I think he only worked like two or three shifts and he just like stopped giving a fuck. And October 1996, he stopped going in altogether. So that same month, October 1996, he applied at Morristown Memorial Hospital.
How many hospitals are in this area?
So many, Devin.
Like, there's a no-fly list. Can't there be, like, a no-nurse list?
I mean, I feel like after this guy, there should be like a blacklist of the nursing profession.
How hard is it to pull someone's license back in 1990, whatever?
Like, well, the thing is, he didn't even have anything on his license. He had one criminal offense at this point for stalking. And I don't even know that the Board of Nursing was tracking that shit back then. I don't know. I should know that, but I don't know that. And so that same month, he applied for Morristown Memorial Hospital. So HR vetted his resume and his references through a third-party company that they used. And a lot of places did this at the time. So they did notice that he had several discrepancies in his hire fire dates, and his termination history was like, I don't know, you know, you've been, you know, asked to give your resignation and then you were fired from this place and like, what's going on? Devin, they hired him anyway to work in their critical care unit because, you know, they were short on nurses.
And let me tell you, look at the world we're living in right now, right? Everyone's short-staffed. I would certainly hope that despite how short-staffed you are and despite how desperately you want to be able to have the staff to care for your people, I would hope that you would come across some discrepancies like that and be like, no, something's fishy.
He's working now at Morristown because HR gives zero fucks about people that keep getting fired and are super suspicious. And there's like an air of, you know, murder around them and whatnot. So,
do those people eventually lose their jobs? Am I skipping ahead?
So you are.
Okay.
You are.
Stop it, Devin.
And the answer is not really. Because, I mean, ultimately, if you look at all of these places that just like hired him blindly, like they are the ones that are largely, I mean, they're not directly responsible, but if somebody had been like, I don't want to fucking hire this guy, then, you know, maybe he wouldn't have.
Exactly.
He wouldn't have killed a lot of the people that he killed.
Oh, anger.
Very sad. So he's still kind of like spiraling mentally at this point. So he had a couple more suicide attempts, followed by hospitalizations, then a psych stay, then an outpatient program, and the cycle essentially just never ended. It's ridiculous. So at Morristown, his performance was like across the board poor. The morning shift would like find patients disheveled and in unsafe situations. Mm. You guys, the first cardinal rule of nursing, you don't leave a mess for the next shift. You know, everyone's going to fucking hate you.
Yes.
If you leave a mess, you clean
shift
up your
shit.
Shift
wars are bad enough.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You don't leave a mess for the next shift. Da-na-da-na. That's my song. There were a lot of incident reports filed because not only was he just like leaving annoying messes, but he was also leaving patients in like really unsafe situations. Like no bed alarms, you know, the fall precautions weren't being followed, beds up, you know, up in the sky.
Do hospitals still use bed alarms?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Of course.
I don't work. I'm not a hospital girl.
She's
so.
Not a hospital nurse. It's all good. We just need nurses everywhere. So all of this culminated in Charlie omitting a dose of sub-Q heparin for a patient who apparently ended up dying. I don't really know the details on that because I couldn't find a whole lot more information.
Wouldn't that be ironic?
Well, subcutaneous heparin is usually given for like DVT prophylaxis. Right. So what I'm assuming is that he just like didn't give a couple doses. The patient shot a clot and then died.
Imagine
that's what I'm
that.
Thinking.
This patient died because he didn't give the heparin versus those that were dying from their heparin.
He just, who knows influence. How many people he actually killed by just like completely ignoring what he was supposed to do and doing whatever Charlie Colon
there's
wanted
order
to do.
For that? I don't want to know.
Yeah,
not
fuck
important.
That. Yeah. So the doc found him and reamed him out after this. He's like, I know what you did. You didn't give the heparin, and this guy shot a clot because of you. And so August 13th in 1997, he was fired from Morristown.
This makes three or four.
Do you think that he gets another job after this, being fired from two places and asked to resign at another place?
My heart wants to say no, but I see the pages still go on your sheet. So
there's
a lot more
pages.
I'm going to say yes. Yes. Who hired him blindly now?
Okay, so he has a strategy now. He's like, oh shit, I've burned a lot of bridges in the state of New Jersey.
What state are we moving to?
Pennsylvania!
Should have gone farther, dude. They're semi-connected.
He only really like considered it because he had spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania for his psychiatric stays. He's been to a couple of psych facilities in Pennsylvania. So
sounds like you should go back.
Yeah, no kidding. So he should like kind of live
or
there.
Or to jail.
Jail? So he joined an agency, a nursing agency, and he got a new nursing license for the state of PA.
Smart.
I know. So he began working at Liberty Nursing and Rehab Center via a staffing agency, and they were desperate for staff.
Shocker. One of these days, I want to hear a nursing story where somebody is not short of staff.
I don't think that exists.
It's 2035, like a unicorn. Maybe? 2035, 14 maybe. More years, maybe?
I feel like some other shit's going to
go to nursing
now.
School, folks. Yeah. Go to nursing school.
Dude, you will never be out of job.
It sucks. For real. Nursing school's terrible.
To work at the... To
but
work
go
at
to
this.
It. Do it. Commit 2 to 4 years of your life. To something that
anything.
Takes the soul out of you.
You can be an administrator. You can do like the high adrenaline stuff. You could teach. You could literally fucking
once
you
get
you
through
want.
Nursing school, the doors are. I was just telling a girl
the
this the other
open,
day.
Bitch.
She was saying the other day how she. Hey, this is a shout out to Jamie. You're not a Patreon yet, but hey,
go
we
Jamie.
Were talking about this the other day, Jamie. I give her a compliment every day that she works because I just think she's wonderful.
We love you, Jamie. I don't know you, but Devin loves you, so I love you.
And we were talking, and she said that she was having a rough day and just, you know, wanted to quit nursing school. And I was thinking, recalling of all the times we had that back in the day.
Oh, my God. Remember when I failed I failed something.
You did.
I did.
You did. You did.
It still is
but
like a knife in my soul.
Look where you are.
But I overcame it. You just got to not give up. I had to redo it, and I did better that time.
But we were having the conversation about how nursing school sucks the life out of you.
Oh, it's awful. It's a bitch.
But look at all the options you have once you are done. You commit yourself to those few years, and the options are limitless.
So also, I hope you all know that we love like the medical profession, and we're not doing this to, you know, berate the medical profession at all and to shame anybody in any given medical profession.
No.
We love everybody who works in the medical profession. We are longtime medical professionals, and we are getting really old. But we just wanted to kind of shine a light on these kind of bad apples, because there are bad apples
and
in
maybe
every job.
Also shine a light that if you see some of these suspicious things, be like, you know what,
follow your gut, guys. Your gut. Something doesn't seem right, it's probably not right.
Yep.
So here we are. He's taken a $5 an hour pay cut to work at this staffing agency at Liberty Nursing and Rehab Center in PA. So
that's ironic, staffing agencies are usually up there.
Yeah, well, not this one.
Well,
so
it is the 90s.
So let's meet Francis Henry, who's a patient at Liberty. He was there recovering from a vertebral fracture and was hospitalized after he met Charlie, because Charlie gave him a massive dose of insulin and he died.
Ugh.
I know.
Franny.
So this did end in an investigation, because when you work.
Did he do this like right away?
Yeah. So
got a new job.
When you work.
He's dead today.
In a rehab center, you have much fewer staff. So when this guy died of what seemed to be an insulin overdose, it was pretty obvious who that came from, because else could it have been?
Well, right. And
so this did get investigated. And so he and another nurse that were working that night were both sort of under the microscope, but she ended up getting blamed. And she got sued for damages.
Stop it.
They did finally narrow him down eventually and eliminate her once they did like
a
full investigation.
I was gonna say, because again, the proof thing.
Exactly. And then so her suit was completely dropped, but again, no proof, because nobody saw it. Nobody could prove that this guy was just injecting people with whatever he wanted. So there were more events at Liberty that were similar. He killed more people. He injured more people.
So they were able to rule her out, but still not zone in on him?
Yeah. So he kept his job because they couldn't prove it.
Oh,
I know. So this is Christmas time of 1998. He left the rehab center because, again, his reputation there is starting to deteriorate, and he needs
shocker
a new environment. So he ended up at Easton Hospital in their ICU.
Oh.
And somehow, so this is the fifth facility that he's worked for in the past, his career.
Mm-hmm.
So there, it estimates that he was responsible for 5 or 6 deaths.
Ugh.
And those are deaths, not events.
Not,
probably
yeah,
a
not,
lot
not
more
people
events.
That are on the verge that were able to be saved or
exactly.
Whatnot.
And again, I apologize for not having the details of every single person, but he doesn't even know all of the people that he killed. He just randomly, he poisoned random IV bags
and
with insulin and digoxin.
Yeah, for sure. And I think people should also know that these are just stories that we want to talk about. We haven't, like, we're researching so that we know the subject.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like we're trying the case where we need to have every single detail.
Maybe you're not trying the case.
Oh, did you get a lawyer degree now too?
Yeah. Did. Kate and Devin Associates at law.
Yeah. So, I mean, to the, we've also researched these to give you the information to the best of our knowledge. But please, you know, it, this is not like.
Yeah. If any of you out there have any more details that you want to add, like, we would love to know. Love please send us messages.
We
yes.
We love the feedback.
We love feedback. Okay. So Christmas in 1998, he left for Easton Hospital in their ICU. There were more deaths, 5 to 6 to be exact. There was a patient there by the name of Otmar Schramm. The GP that was taking care of him noticed that his lab tests that he had ordered were, like, not coming back. And he was like, what the hell? I ordered a bunch of labs on this guy.
They're not done?
They're not done. And also, it didn't really seem like he was getting any of the right medications.
Oh, I wonder
Guess
why.
Guess who was taking care of him? So... He also added on a digoxin level.
I'm just gonna do that now every time we want to say that it's Colin.
I hope so.
All right.
I hope you do. So this guy was on digoxin. So the doctor ordered a digoxin level and it was crazy high.
Finally, somebody's crazy high. For stuff.
So the guy ended up coding and died.
Oh.
I know. And it was a similar situation. His heart rate and blood pressure dropped. It all seemed to be digoxin toxicity. So the doctor that was taking care of him told the family, again, please request an autopsy because I have a lot of suspicions about the nurse that was taking care of him that night.
So this is now at least that what we know of, the second autopsy.
Exactly.
Crazy shit, folks.
After only 3 months, he leaves that job. He was there for 3 months. And he's jumping job to job, only spending like a few months in each place because like once suspicion rises, he moves on to the next
Sounds
situation.
Like travel nursing's perfect for him. Does he do that?
No, but he is an agency nurse.
I mean, well. Yeah.
So March of 99, he starts working at Lehigh Valley Hospital in their burn unit. Back to his burn
roots. Oh,
back
to the original days. Oh, crap.
So here he reports having killed 4 to 5 people. Again, we can't confirm, we don't know.
Because he doesn't even remember all of them.
Actually, no, that's a mistake. So I said we can't confirm, but 2 of them were confirmed.
All right.
So there are 2 that were confirmed to have been bolused with digoxin that he did kill. So around this time, he was introduced to a new barrier, which was the Pyxis machine.
Oh.
Devin, why don't you tell us what a Pyxis machine is?
A Pyxis machine. Gosh, I haven't worked with one in years. I mean, we have one as far as our backup. But the Pyxis, it's basically like this electronic med storage. Mm-hmm. You have to type in your patient's name. It goes to all their stuff. It brings you a list of the medications that they're on. And it's also a way to electronically monitor what you're giving for the patients.
Exactly.
And in the hospital, you have to use it for all of your meds, correct?
Like exactly.
Even your Tylenols and your OTCs.
Exactly.
That way to monitor some of these meds that aren't regulated,
right.
like needing a count, like narcotics.
No more pulling out floor stock insulin and giving it to patients.
Yeah.
No more pulling out digoxin without being detected.
Right.
None of it's floor stock anymore. It's all in the computer.
And then, and that way the Pyxis is able to show who's taking it out, what
for
time.
What patient,
everything's
what time.
Like ticketed, time stamped.
Exactly. And if there's a discrepancy in the count of medications, then it gets like recorded and it points you to
and
exact.
And it's found fast.
Found
and
fast.
It's found fast.
So this became a new technology. He did find ways around this very easily.
Well, I'm sure when it first came out, they had to tweak and everything.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. So he found ways around this.
Now, but of course he did.
So he was able to like take double doses out. And if the count wasn't done till like the following day or even 2 days, then it was hard to, you know, and it wasn't
right, then
anything
there's several
that was
nurses
controlled.
That it could have been.
Right. And then again, it wasn't anything that was a controlled medication. So it wasn't even really closely like looked at, which is stupid. But anyway, so.
All my empathy
challenge.
In the first episode's just out
I know
the window.
It. So here we are with 22-year-old Matthew Mattern, who was a burn victim.
22?
Yeah, 22 years old. So a young
baby.
Guy. He unfortunately had massive burn trauma over about 60% of his body. And by what they call the rule of nines, which is...
Yes, I remember
Remember
that.
The rule of nines?
I remember that.
By that algorithm, his prognosis is in the... toilet.
They basically, now I remember this from school, so the rule of nine, they split your body into 9 different parts,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Counting the percentage of what you're burned.
Exactly, right.
Yes.
So he had about 60%, which gives him a very poor prognosis overall. So unfortunately, He was bolused with digoxin. He is one of the confirmed deaths.
Okay.
From this period. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he was bolused with digoxin. His heart rate and blood pressure dropped, and he coded and died.
Oh.
Again,
at 22.
He's picking people though with these poor prognoses, so
because
that
then
it
again,
masks what he does.
Yeah, and then maybe this person's not going to get an autopsy, like the breast cancer girl who was supposed to go home.
Exactly. And his other victim that was confirmed here was named Stella Danielzik, and she was in a similar situation. She had burns over a lot of her body and was given a poor prognosis, ended up with a digoxin bolus, and passed away. Very unfortunate for these people.
Wow.
So let's move to April 2000. It was time for him to move on again because things were getting a little dicey.
Hello.
Again, he was raising suspicion. People were starting to notice that his behavior had changed. So he moved to St. Luke's Hospital in their coronary care unit. And
sounds appropriate.
Right? He likes the higher levels
let's
of care because that's where people die.
I was going to say, yeah, let's, yeah. He doesn't want to be on the basic med-surg when they're sick, but
no,
not
he doesn't
like...
want stable patients. He doesn't want that. So at St. Luke's in the coronary care unit, quickly, patients began coding and dying, like in clusters. And all of these clusters seemed to coincide with his work stretches. And it became apparent to people that he really enjoyed the life-saving drama and the adrenaline of the code. And it seemed as though he knew that patients were going to code before they did. So,
because he was giving them the meds to make the code.
Exactly.
Hello? If you're giving someone the weapon that's going to kill them, of course you know what's
exactly
going to happen.
So... the Pyxis thing, though, catches up with him because
good.
In spring 2001, the department starts noticing.
I can't believe this went on for this long.
I know. Doesn't it make you crazy?
Oh,
it just
God.
Makes me absolutely insane that he was given these opportunities. This is now his seventh facility. And if at the first facility somebody just, like, involved the right people and investigated him for murder, then none of this would have happened. It's just crazy making. So,
well, didn't they, when we were talking in episode one, they couldn't arrest him. They could fire him, but not arrest him.
Yeah, there was a big investigation.
They did involve some legal, but again.
It wasn't legal, though, Devin. They had involved only hospital administration. Hospital administration conducted that entire thing, and they did not involve the police because they didn't want to get sued.
Yeah.
Subsequently... all of those records got destroyed from all of those patients when people finally did arrest him and tried to go back and confirm all of these deaths. Mysteriously, all those records disappeared because the hospital didn't want to get sued. Exactly.
Creepy shit.
So people start coding and dying. And in spring 2001, the Pyxis thing catches up with him because people start noticing that we're using a whole lot more of these medications and we're starting to get a lot of discrepancies in our Pyxis, like a lot of digoxin in particular, and another medication called Vecuronium is missing.
Vecuronium. So, what's this med?
Vecuronium is a paralytic, which is used for typically by anesthesiologists or specially trained nurses for sedated patients, typically who are ventilated.
Yep.
And it's used to essentially paralyze someone to promote ventilator synchronicity or during surgeries if the surgeon really needs someone fully paralyzed.
Right.
So,
okay, thank you for that explanation.
Anytime. So if this medication is given to somebody not on a breathing tube, it will kill you because... when you are paralyzed, you cannot breathe on your own.
Correct.
So essentially, people will suffocate to death when they're given this without being on a ventilator.
Right.
So they noticed that that was going missing as well.
Oh, no.
I know. So we're starting to branch out a little bit. So in June 2002, staff started noticing that Sharp's containers were unusually full. And they were full of vials and syringes that Cullen had been using to spike the bags of heparin and the bags of fluid. And he was also starting to spike antibiotic doses, IV
antibiotic
doses.
Well, I think I can appreciate the fact that he was at least using needle safety. You remembered something from nursing school.
So true. Cullen used these syringes and these needles to spike his bags and poison antibiotic doses and heparin and IV fluids with things like Vecuronium and digoxin and insulin.
But now, aren't all of these things in the Pyxis?
Yes. And they've noticed some Pyxis discrepancies, and they're investigating it, but they have no way of telling who it's coming from at this point. So, they did finally notice. This is how they discovered with the Sharps boxes that it was Cullen. So, they noticed that when he was on, that the Sharps boxes were fuller, and they tended to fill, like, overnight on the nights that he was working. So finally, somebody was
narrowing
like,
it down.
What the fuck is up with this? So admin at St. Luke's started doing an investigation, and immediately they involved their risk management team and their attorneys, and they interviewed him and drilled him about it. They were like, what is all these syringes and why are all these meds missing? And obviously they're going somewhere. So what the fuck are you doing? So they said to him, you know,
I just have to say, I'm so waiting for the shit to hit the fan.
Hits the fan, but not for a little
like
while.
I feel like we're like here.
We have some time. Okay. We have some time.
I feel cool. Like we're like.
We're getting there, though. We're getting there.
It's building.
It is building. And he's like really spiraling out of control. He just gives no fucks. This is so brazen of him. I can't believe that he got away with this for so long. Anyway, I digress. They drilled him about it. Initially, he was like aloof and denied it completely. He was aloof. They finally confronted him with the evidence and were like, look, all of these things were found in the Sharps box the night after you left. It really only could have been you. Mm-hmm. And then all of these patients like crashed. So like, tell me what this means. And he just kind of crossed his arms and said, quote, you already made up your mind about it. So he was just like, I give no fucks.
That's just as guilty as the
exactly.
You can't prove anything.
Exactly. It's so guilty. So they cut him a deal. He resigned. They cut him a deal and they said, if you resign, we will give you neutral references. And so the incident never appeared on any of his records and he was given neutral references, which means that when the next facility calls and asks for
they're
a reference,
say neither good nor
they
bad.
Say, we have a neutral position with this employee. We are unable to state whether he did good or did bad. And that's the end of that. So that's the kind of shit that went down and is another piece of the Charlie Cullen puzzle about why he was allowed to do everything that he did.
Call him Edward Cullen.
He doesn't deserve the Edward Cullen
name.
No,
he doesn't.
So June 2002, he got a job at Sacred Heart Hospital in Allentown, PA in their cardiac care unit. And they were desperate for stuff.
Tell me something else new.
I know. They didn't call his references.
Oh, God.
Winners! Didn't call him at all. 2 weeks later, he was asked to stop coming to work for his shifts.
2 weeks later?
Yes, 2 weeks later.
His time frame is getting shorter and shorter.
Getting shorter and shorter. 2 weeks later. And the staff, it only took 2 weeks for the staff to be like, we gotta fire this guy. He is so unsafe. He's wicked sketchy. He's making everybody really uncomfortable.
At that point, are you even off orientation?
No. Listen.
Are you still with a preceptor?
There was a petition among the nursing staff to get him fired. 2 weeks is what that took. 2 weeks. There was a petition. And finally, they were like, okay, yeah, I suppose.
We should have checked references on that guy.
Exactly. So, September of 2002, he managed to get another position at Somerset Hospital, which was about an hour away from his hometown. So, he cannot number the amount of patients that he murdered at Somerset. He says it was a lot. He doesn't know how many.
So, this is like where it was just like mass.
Yeah, he had escalated.
People have been coming for me. Let's do
exactly.
My damage.
In July of 2003, a patient receiving digoxin for heart failure was noted to have her dig level increase over a 48-hour period from 0.6, which is like a good therapeutic level, to 9.92, which I cannot believe she was breathing. I can't believe it. Holy shitballs. I can't believe she was breathing. Poison control was called.
She lived.
Hold on. Poison control was called, and essentially, they told them that they had to have megadosed her. There's no other reason for a digoxin level to spike that high. She had to have had a massively inappropriate amount of digoxin at one time. So poison control, this whole separate entity, like kind of took this on and were like, holy shit, what's happening to this person at this hospital? So they realized that they had called them for this exact issue before.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
There was another patient with a critically high digoxin level that a different staff member had called about, and they told them the same thing. This patient had to have been megadosed. So at this point, the medical director of poison control, Dr. Stephen Marcus. We love Dr. Stephen Marcus.
Thank you, Stephen Marcus.
We love Dr. Stephen Marcus. So
the shit's hitting the fan.
Shit's starting to hit the fan. Oh, so he recommends an investigation, which was conducted, and he was the one to propose that the hospital go to the authorities. He's like, you guys, this is obviously intentional.
There's no way any human nurse
would deliver that amount of digoxin unintentionally several times. This is intentional. So at this point, because they had Dr. Stephen Marcus on their ass saying essentially you report it or I do, they were obligated to report
for
it
sure.
to authorities.
For sure.
So the Pyxis records from this hospital also all pointed to Charlie. A bunch of missing meds, bunch of weird removals from the Pyxis, all pointing to Charlie. So he would order things, pull them, and then cancel the order. This was his critical mistake. He thought that if he entered a medication order for a patient in the system, pulled the medication out of the Pyxis, and then canceled the order, that it made the whole thing go away in the system, and he was wrong.
There's a paper trail.
He thought it
just completely all got erased.
He thought that if he went back later and canceled the order, that any trace of him having taken that out of the Pyxis would disappear completely, and he was completely wrong. That was dumb. So all of these records pointed to Charlie doing this several times, ordering a medication, removing it from the Pyxis, and then discontinuing
the
order.
He's been smart throughout this whole thing. In his way of thinking, like, to avoid these things and to go around and to not get caught.
Exactly.
He's been brighter than to just think if you hit a button, it goes away.
Yes.
So again, was he asking for it?
I think.
Come and get me.
Of course. I feel like at this point, it's been nearly 16 years and he was like, I can't believe I'm still upright and sniffing the air with this shit. I really can't.
Big game of cat and mouse.
So he was not aware that it would still be recorded, or maybe he was, maybe this was self-destruct. I don't know. Either way, there was obviously a lot of records of him doing this over and over again. So authorities were called. Tim Braun was the lead investigator, Detective Tim Braun, on this whole case, and he started gathering reports from the Pyxis, reports from personnel, and he started looking into all of his past jobs, and he started talking to personnel from all of his past jobs, and everything is starting to kind of come to light. That this guy just leaves a fucking smelly shit trail wherever he goes, and a bunch of patients die in his wake. So he, with all of these things, all of this hearsay, all of this conjecture, and all of these reports, it's not enough to make an arrest.
Come on!
Because there's no proof.
You're killing me.
The only thing the Pyxis stuff proves is that he incorrectly removed a medication. There is no camera evidence or firsthand accounts.
You need the proof that he took it and put it in the body.
You need the proof that he physically administered the wrong drug and to cause the death, which they could not do that. So after all of this, Tim Braun essentially said, we need to catch this guy in the act or we need a confession. So Charlie had made a friend at this past job. Her name was Amy, and she was also an ICU nurse. And they really hit it off. Amy's really cool. She's like a cool girl. Like, everybody gets along with her. She never had any intention of dating Charlie, and I don't think Charlie ever really was romantically interested in her, but they did really hit it off. She had some mental health struggles in the past, too, and the two kind of confided in each other, like he did with Michelle earlier on.
That's also a pattern.
Exactly. So, now, she did kind of back away from Charlie before all of this went down, because as soon as things sort of started to get suspicious, she was like, I don't really want to be involved with this. They did stay in touch, though. They would write letters and emails back and forth. But she was like, I'm not going to like really be personally involved with this guy. But she, even though they only had like the littlest of friendships, she was literally all that Charlie had. Remember, Charlie doesn't have anybody else. And he gets very codependent with the women in his life. So he is like dumping all of his fucking eggs into the Amy basket right now. Poor Amy. We love Amy. So finally, the FBI gets involved in this situation. Shit's about to. So the FBI gets a hold of Amy and they're like, hey, Amy, we really think that Charlie Cullen is pulling some shit here. And look at all of this stuff that he has done at all of his prior jobs. And look at all of these people that have died that he may have killed. So she agreed to wear a wire and to try to get a confession out of Charlie.
Really?
Yes.
She did.
Girl, Amy. So at this point, Charlie is like at his, you know, lowest mentally. Clearly.
Okay.
Right? Like you have to be in a pretty fucked up position. She wears a wire. They meet for lunch at a diner. She was great. She like really tried. So they had a long conversation, and actually the entire conversation is like dictated in this book that I read. And it's incredible what she did. Essentially, the gist of it is that he refers to himself as like the scapegoat. He's always the scapegoat wherever he goes, and everybody blames all of the unit's problems on me, and then it all comes down on me, and I'm an easy target because of my mental health. And she says to him at one point, you know what, Charlie, I have been nursing for 20 years. In that entire 20-year period, never have I once been accused of murder. And you have been accused of murder at every single job that you've worked in. So I kind of feel like that's a thing. So he started, after she said that, he kind of got really upset and started opening up a little bit.
Okay.
So he got upset, emotional, not mad at her.
It
really started to bring to light, like, you know what? Wow, like she's right. People realize, like, people know, and they're gonna figure it out. And so he starts hoping they've already figured it out. They're just trying to prove it, buddy. So she's like, you know, why are you running? Why are you hiding? Like, this should really all be over. I want to come with you. Like, let's just both go to the station together. And what are you going to tell them? And he starts really going into a little bit more detail about what he did and why he did it. And he essentially admitted that he would take drugs and inject patients with them, and that he killed, quote, he didn't know how many people. So this was it. So this is exactly what they needed.
There's the ringer.
So he was arrested the following day at a restaurant. This was December 12th in 2003. And upon his arrest, during his interrogation, he told investigators that he murdered over 40 people. And he reported that he blacked out regularly while he was at work. And he could have killed more. He really doesn't know. He also doesn't remember killing a lot of these people.
Blacked out how?
Like, he just doesn't remember. He said, I would have periods that I blacked out and I have no recollection of what happened. It's entirely possible that I killed more. I really don't know. Between the states of New Jersey and Pennsylvania, investigators were able to confirm 29 of these people. So so he was offered a plea agreement because, well, here's the thing. They wanted to figure out who the victims were for the families.
Yes.
wanted to be able to confirm all of this and figure out what happened. So he was offered a deal, essentially, to avoid the death penalty if he cooperated and started assisting the investigations and trying to uncover who these patients were that he killed. So when we get to court, His behavior is super weird, super bizarre. He would like yell at the judge, and he would just stand there and repeatedly yell over and over again, "You need to step down. You need to step down. You need to step down."
You don't do that to the judge. I shit
you not. You don't.
You don't do that to the judge.
This was only the arraignment. Like, they couldn't even get through the arraignment because he would not shut the fuck up. So they had to bring him back out, gagged and restrained for a lot of his proceedings because he would not shut the fuck up. This guy was insane. Because,
of course, he had to be there. You have to be at your
arraignment. Oh, you have to. Yeah, you have to. Yeah, so he was gagged and restrained. So he did this, like, on several occasions. This was not, like, a one-time thing. Like, he regularly had to be restrained and gagged so that he would not interrupt his own court proceedings.
Oh, my goodness.
So in November of 2004... he pleaded guilty in Pennsylvania to 6 murders and 3 attempts. And in April of 2004, he pleaded guilty to 13 murders and 2 attempts. And again, these were the ones that they could confirm.
At the time, yeah.
Exactly. And he received 13 consecutive life sentences for the 13 murders in the trial in April of 2004 in New Jersey. And then in November of 2004, he received 6 consecutive life sentences for those.
So 19 life sentences.
Exactly.
So he's never leaving jail.
I hope not. My God. So to this day, actually, he continues to work with investigators on identifying the additional victims of the
past.
That
was going to be my next question.
He's still working with people.
2004, so we're 17 years later.
Exactly.
So
he's still working with people. He's still trying to uncover who he did, you know, who these victims were. But here's the problem. A lot of hospitals, most of these hospitals, in fact, destroyed their records of the time that he was there.
To because avoid
they
a
were
suit.
Exactly to
especially
avoid a lawsuit.
In the HR.
Yes.
As far as references and not doing the due diligence and whatever else.
Most of these investigations within the hospitals, again, were internal, and they never involved any legal at all, any real authority.
Right, right.
So they just took it upon themselves to get rid of the records and wash their hands of it completely, which is very sad for the victims and their families.
I don't know what happened. We fired them. I don't know.
Exactly. So he's now in jail. Let's talk a little bit about his motive, because he's stated repeatedly that for him, this was a quote-unquote act of mercy, which is how he gained the name the Angel of Death. And he would say, oh, I would do this for people that were, like, close to death or who were suffering. And you know what? Like, I buy that for maybe some burn victims.
I was going to say maybe in the very beginning.
What about Helen Dean, who was going to discharge the next day and ended up dying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a whole mess of bullshit, in my opinion. So he's trying to play himself off like he was, you know, sort of some sort of angel of mercy, which, like, fuck you. Honestly, fuck you.
I feel like he had no control over the things that happened in his childhood. And then this was just like his way to control what would happen to
other
people.
Exactly. And it wasn't just Helen Dean. There were multiple patients that were like on the mend and getting ready to recover. And he said specifically he was trying to save people. This doesn't make sense to me because he says specifically he was trying to save people from the dehumanization of being coded. When he would cause codes,
yeah,
like regularly,
I was gonna say, bullshit.
By making people bradycardic and hypoglycemic.
Nope.
So
bullshit.
Exactly. He likely brought on more suffering with these acts. And per his psychiatrist, it actually appears that he truly does not realize this at all. His psychiatrist is like, he has no comprehension that he like caused more suffering. And in his head, he really was doing people a favor, which to me, I don't know that I buy that 100%. I feel like each killing was like impulse driven. And there are reports that he claims that he did black out during and after his acts. But like, I don't know if that's true. Like, I mean, the guy obviously had a lot of mental health issues that were completely unaddressed. And that's very sad. But a lot of people have mental health issues and they don't kill people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So legal impact. Many employers.
I want to know why he didn't give himself to Jackson.
If he knew that was going to do it and he was quote unquote,
it clearly was working
to kill himself.
That's what I'm saying. That's
exactly.
What I said the first time. I'm like,
exactly.
He seems to have figured it out plenty of times before.
You're so smart, Devin. You're so smart. So the legal impact. So a lot of employers like feared reporting to authorities and they wanted to avoid lawsuits. So like we said, they destroyed their records. Now, after his conviction, guess what? People fucking sued the shit out of these hospitals.
No kidding.
Sorry, guys, it did not work. So all of these hospitals got massive lawsuits following his conviction. So in New Jersey and Pennsylvania,
probably only worse by destroying the records.
Some laws were changed, too. So in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and in 35 other states, some new laws were adopted around honest job appraisals and legal protection for employees when they reveal the truth. So if an or for employers, I'm sorry, for employers and employees. So if an employer says, you know what, this, you know, I think that this guy might have killed somebody, please don't hire him. They can't go, the law can't come find the hospital for saying that because they reported honestly.
Right.
You see what I mean?
So, and is this where the insulin, the dual, remember you said that it came from this?
Yes. In the year 2004 specifically, it started becoming a gold standard for hospitals to start double signing off on short acting insulin.
I and remember that's still a thing the very now. First time I had to do that in school. And that's why I was like, oh, all right. And so now hear the reason behind it.
Exactly. It's interesting, right?
I wish they were doing it before.
And also in 2004, the Patient Safety Act, which is only a New Jersey law, but it increases responsibility for reporting serious preventable adverse effects from hospitals. And it requires
hospitals have a duty.
So these hospitals also are now required to keep their employment records and disciplinary records for 7 years. So they are not able to destroy their disciplinary records anymore in case some shit like this goes down again.
And why? I was going to say that you would think, especially if you did it right, that those disciplinary records would help you in this case.
Of course it would.
But, you know.
Yeah, but they're not doing it right. They were just trying to avoid a lawsuit completely. They didn't care about doing it right. They're assholes.
Ugh.
So, real quick, just on the source. Again, this book that I got a lot of my material from was The Good Nurse by Charles Graber. It was amazing. If you want to hear a little bit more about the case, or if you want to read more about the taped conversation between Amy and Charles, it is fascinating. It's so well written, such an easy, quick read. So I'll link it in the show notes. Also, there's a movie being made about this, which I didn't know.
Really?
I found that on Wikipedia, so I'm not sure how true it is. No shame to Wikipedia, but we all know.
Yeah,
what's
we
up.
Know.
So it's actually starring Eddie Redmayne and Jessica Chastain, and it's going to be called The Good Nurse, based on the book by Charles Graber. So I'm
psyched. Can we watch it together?
Yes. Right, holding hands, eating popcorn.
Maybe not the hands part.
Definitely the hands part. Fuck you. We're definitely holding hands. You guys, that is the case. Charles Cullen, who is just a douchebag of the highest order.
So that is the first story for Med Crimes Podcast.
It is.
You picked a doozy.
I told you.
My emotions in the first episode were all over the place, but now in the second one, it's like, no, I hate you, dude.
I feel like it's one of those just things that's important to share, because although we don't know all of the victims, it's important to...
They come from a past.
They come from the... Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, so sad what happened to those people. And a lot of those people's victims, you know, a lot of those people's families will never get closure.
No,
you know,
no, because there's still so many that
it's
are
so
not
sad.
Confirmed.
So if you guys like what you hear, please, please, please. I hope you like it too. We're having a great time. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast, or follow us on Twitter at Med Crimes PC. You can also search us on Facebook
at Med Crimes Podcast.
Sorry. God damn it.
She'll say it again. Med Crimes Podcast on Facebook.
There you go. Anyway, thank you so much for hanging out with us. I'm Kate.
I'm Devin.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.